Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. On Thursday, May 26th, I was able to fulfill a longtime dream of mine to attend a Shakespeare play at the Globe Theatre in London. I mean, this is the ultimate for a literature major, especially one that has to take Shakespeare, just to be able to go to the Globe, because history shows that the original Globe Theatre was built by Shakespeare. My wife Deborah and I attended the Globe's current production of Shakespeare's comedy, The Taming of the Shrew. Now, before my trip to England, I had read Melanie Phillips' May 10th article in The Times titled, "Poor Shakespeare Must Be Turning in His Grave." In this article, Ms. Phillips calls out the Globe's artistic director for cutting and revising Shakespeare's plays to make them relevant to modern audiences. This would be a good article for you to read. I know I've mentioned it before on the program, but I'm planning to also do an article on a similar theme for the Philadelphia Trumpet magazine. Also, prior to my trip, I did make some contacts with the Globe Press Office. I was seeking permission to tape a Man on the Street type program on the Globe's grounds, and I wanted to just capture people's excitement while visiting this iconic symbol of Shakespeare's life and his incredible poetic works. I mean, it's exciting to visit the Globe. My request was denied because it was against Globe Theatre policy, and I have to admit that when I was on the Globe's grounds, which are truly very small, I realized the impracticability of such a venture. But I have to say that I did wonder at the time if maybe the Globe just did not want any more negative press about their revised productions of Shakespeare's plays. But I just want you to know I was able to tape a short program of Deborah's and my impression of visiting the Globe and seeing the plays. We did this just outside the Globe Theatre in the Bankside District of London on the southern bank of the River Thames. Now, it's just a short segment, so after that, I want to discuss with you the Globe's production of Taming of the Shrew. I'm sitting with my wife, Deborah, outside the Globe Theatre, and we just attended Shakespeare's play Taming of the Shrew. And I have to say, it was really quite a fun experience. We will talk a little bit about the fun things we experienced, and we'll talk a little bit about Taming of the Shrew. Now, we do not intend to cover the play Taming of the Shrew on Just the Best Literature. It is one of the comedies, and it may not be necessarily the most important of Shakespeare's plays to read, but it was fun to attend the Globe. It was fun to be inside the Globe, and it's really quite amazing. It's really... We're on the bankside side of the River Thames, and from the United States, when we look at pictures of the Globe, you imagine this in this nice big area, but it's really sandwiched in between a lot of buildings, and so it was actually very hard to find. But once inside, it is very typically the Globe. It was patterned after the original Globe that we know that. Shakespeare built in the late 1500s, so I'm just going to ask Deborah really quickly, what did you think when we first entered the Globe and we took our seats? What did you think of it all?
Well, I really enjoyed it. I really felt like this is kind of like what it would have been like to have been at the Globe and to be in the audience when Shakespeare performed his plays. It was neat looking around. We were up kind of high, and everything is wooden. The seats are very uncomfortable, but they're not bad compared to what we're used to nowadays. But it was great. I could even look and see the they actually, the roof, you could see the roof because it's all open, and it looked like it was a thatched roof. Now it's probably, it could have been fake thatching, but it was neat to see that. And we feel like you're close to all the actors. It was fun to see how they, when the place, after the play started, they did interact with some of the audience. There are people standing around the stage, and they did have that at Shakespeare's time. Those are the more inexpensive seats, if you could stand that long. But there were a lot of people there, I was surprised, were standing. And then they actually included them, some of those people, in some of the scenes.
What we'll do for everyone on JBL is we'll get some photographs and maybe some drawings of the Globe. But there is, in the Globe, it is totally open, the roof. And so they have done a complete replica, and I absolutely do think it is a thatched roof. There was one part during the performance that a couple pigeons flew in, and it's really quite funny. But there is when they produce the plays, or when they first open the Globe, they do have what they call the yard area. And, you know, all levels of society would attend the Globe. Some could afford better seating than others, but most of their common people would pay a few pence, and they would go in and stand in the yard, and they would just be able to, you know, experience the play. The actors walk in and off the stage through the yard, and so there is a lot of interaction. But if you had been in London when the Globe opened and you were attending a play and it rained, you just watched the play in the rain. And that's still the same way here today. We have absolutely beautiful weather today here in London, so we're very happy about that. It was a little misty back at Edstone this morning. I was really concerned about that, so we did not have to suffer with the rain. So, but it was. The theater was packed. But one other thing that the Shakespeare would have done, and they did it again today, and I think they worked very hard to give you that, maybe I would say 16th century experience, is that they start out the play with some music. Shakespeare would have maybe some circus acts, they would have maybe some jousting, maybe they would have a little bit of comedy, or maybe even begin with a little play to get people warmed up for the play. And in Taming of the Shrew, if anybody knows that play, it actually begins with a play, but it's not the play. And Shakespeare was a lover. He was kind of a genius at putting plays inside of plays inside of plays. And so they did not do that, but they did play some great Irish music. And there was the Irish flute, there was an accordion, they had a fiddle, and so it was really great. And so I did try and capture that. We'll see if I got away with it or not. We are out on the street, let's say, and so I forgot to bring my earplugs, so I don't know if I captured that music or not, but it looks like if I did, I captured 2 minutes of it. So if we do, we'll play it often on times during this Men on the Street production. It's just the two of us for right now, but that's great. So give me some of your ideas, Deborah, on the play itself.
Well, it was interesting because it seems like sometimes they like to put Shakespeare's plays in different time settings, because, I mean, and like Dennis has said, Shakespeare really wrote these for every man. So they have done that over the years. Now this time, The Taming of the Shrew was set in Ireland in 1916, according to this the program. And the idea was that was the time period of Ireland. I don't know all the history, but Ireland uprising, and also I guess there was also a time of women's rights were being promoted then as well. So there is a theme. It starts out with the Irish theme, and then throughout you get a feeling that especially towards the end, that it's about people who have been downtrodden and are rising up, and so women and the Irish were kind of included in that. So, but yet it wasn't just like that. I mean, it was all very funny most of the time, and there are just some moments where he felt like the person who was playing Kate, she was the lead actress who was having to submit, did not do it willingly and happily. So if anyone knows a story, I don't know if you'll talk about the story or not, but that's those are some of my impressions.
Yes, well, it's amazing. We're again, like I said, we're sitting outside the Globe, and I just saw the actress who plays Kate walk away from me. I was hoping that that maybe I could catch her really quickly, but you know, that could be might be somewhat offensive. But the one of the things that's interesting today is the original cast member that was playing Kate, something disastrous has happened to her health, and they've had to bring in a new cast member to start playing Kate. And the director came out and asked us all to be very patient, because she was going to have to maybe use some, bring some scripts along with her, and maybe be there to catch a few lines if she forgot them. It's really a daunting job to be a Shakespearean actor. I know you will be, either you have heard or you will be hearing an interview I did with Papa Esidu, and he played Hamlet at the Royal Shakespeare Company. He has to learn 1,500 lines for the play, and he said it's just mentally challenging, and then to keep it all in your mind, and then also to keep all the stage, the staging, and then to keep the emotion. So I thought she did a wonderful job today.
Yes, I thought she did a wonderful job as well. She had a little piece of paper once in a while, but it didn't detract at all. She's that definitely what did a very good job.
I've got to get her. I've got to give her credit. She's obviously has a certain amount of humility to come out in front of a audience, and there's people from all over the world, attending that performance, and one of her castmates pushed her out at the end when they were all bowing, and they pushed her out and made her do a bow by herself, and the audience did stand up and give her a standing ovation. So that was pretty interesting. We might want to compare this play with the some of the movies of Taming the Shrew. This has been a story that is very popular, where you have an older sister that's not necessarily marriageable material, but you have a younger sister who is dauntingly beautiful and just very attractive, but she is not permitted to get married until the older sister gets married. And so the whole setup was Petruchio needs money, Kate is very wealthy, he's not the best looking guy, but he does set out to marry her so he can get her wealth. And of course, by the end of the story, they do have love for each other. Although I have to admit that the whole idea of the play is to tame a shrew, or a tough nut kind of woman, and I thought it was in some ways kind of overdone. So the play actually becomes more of setting everyone free from oppression, and we understand from a article that Melanie Phillips wrote that the Globe is taking maybe even some disastrous measures in how they're trying to upgrade Shakespeare's plays, and they're trying to make them more contemporary. And we probably should have expected more of the feminist involvement. Well, again, it's not our job to get into the politics of things, but there is a lot of concern in the Shakespeare world by what's going on. And of course, I have recommended everybody read the Melanie Phillips article, and I think it's something, if you're going to read Shakespeare, you need to know what the scholars and the authorities that are kind of managing these things are doing. It is interesting, the Globe is to be really a museum to Shakespeare's works, and in many ways they're upgrading it, and they're trying to make everybody inclusive. And I know Melanie Phillips really makes some pretty strong statements about what they're doing, and that's actually, she even titles her article as "Poor Shakespeare is turning over in his grave." This is the 400th anniversary of the death of William Shakespeare, so So surely what Melanie Phillips feels, and certainly we do here at JBL and on KPCG-FM, also with Herbert W. Armstrong College, that what makes Shakespeare great is his words, and it's the poetry. And when you get away from the poetry, you're really getting away from really good education. You're really getting away from the ability to learn critical thinking. And, that's why, reading Shakespeare, studying Shakespeare, learning the poetry, even memorizing the poetry, is a great liberal arts education. And we don't want to get away from that and bring in all of these social issues that when you really understand Shakespeare's tragedies and why he wrote them, and he speaks to today, and what these kind of social issues do to families and they do to people, and the tragedies, for example, like Hamlet, really show what happens to people when they get involved in some of the things that people are today. So it is kind of interesting. We did experience it, but again, I don't think it was overly extremely done, and there was there was the funny parts, there was the comedic parts. They were really pleasant, and so it really was kind of exciting that way. But again, it's still a great experience. It's a great experience to see how people did so much with play going in the 1600s. I hope you enjoyed that. Although I have to be honest, that isn't the first program we taped outside the Globe. My wife and I actually taped about a 15 to 20 minute program before the one you heard, and I looked down and realized I didn't push the record button, and so you missed all of that. But in some ways at that time we thought, well, maybe we're a little too negative about what the Globe had done to the play. But now that I've had several weeks to think about it, and certainly my wife and I have had many discussions about it, we probably weren't far off the mark with our feelings. So what I have to say to you today, I want to frame it with a different quote from Melanie Phillips' May 10th article. And it's an important quote, and I want to write some more on this subject for the Philadelphia Trumpet, and that'll be out in a future issue. But here's what Melanie Phillips does. She makes some really very important statements in this article. But towards the middle of the article, she does say, in Shakespeare's plays, the words are everything. The notion that they are unintelligible and off-putting to modern audiences, particularly the restless young, is wide off the mark. Properly taught or produced, the plays can connect to and inspire even the most unpromising audiences. Now, when we bought our tickets for Taming the Shrew, we did hear from some friends of ours who were also visiting England, and they did see one of the one play, and actually they walked out of the play because it was so much not Shakespeare, and they were educated in Shakespeare, and so they just walked off. So we were very careful in choosing what play we saw, and we did decide, well, you can't do too much damage to a comedy. But I guess in some ways we didn't do enough research because we didn't know a lot of the history about this comedy. I know when I was a literature major, we never got into the comedies much. We did get into the histories and the tragedies, but not into the comedies. And so when we got there and we bought a playbill, then we began to realize what was going to happen. And here's what it says in the playbill for the current production of Taming the Shrew. Now, this is by the director. Now, this is not the artistic director of the Globe, but this is the actual director for the play. Her name is Carolyn Byrne. And here's what she says. It says, this year, in the centenary of the 1916 Rising, a momentous event in Irish history that has an almost mythic status in the Irish psyche, the play fell into my hands just when I wanted to contribute to the conversation about the legacy of the Rising. The Proclamation of Independence, which Mary McAuliffe discusses in her essay in this program, promised men and women in Ireland equal status, and women fought in the Rising for Irish independence, but also against a deeply rooted patriarchal society that oppressed women. The narrative struck a chord with me as I was beginning to engage with The Taming of the Shrew, which is why this play is set in 1916 Ireland. It's not a play about the Easter Rising itself, but it attempts to chime with the experience of Irish women. The promises made in the proclamation were not kept in the decades that followed, and Irish women are still seeking equality to this day, much in the same way that Katerina is in The Shrew. Now, we had known, or I did know, that this was going to be an all-Irish cast doing Taming of the Shrew. But I didn't realize the historic implications of it, and nor did I realize, or neither one of us realized, that when we were inside the globe, we weren't necessarily going to see a comedy, even though it is a comedy. And it was really, in some ways, we were impressed with just being inside the globe, and the actors were in period costumes, so it was 1916 style costuming. The men were very well dressed, nicely dressed, and the women were somewhat nicely dressed as well. And of course, having an Irish background and being raised Irish, and I do have pictures of even my great grandfather and my grandfather dressed in this kind of dress. So it did kind of was actually a little bit fun with me until we really got into the program. And what the program really became is, for example, maybe I should just say this, that the play of Taming of the Shrew is supposed to be a comedy. And it's actually to be a farcical comedy. And, you know, it's meant to be lighthearted. There has been a lot of trouble with the play over the years. I've done some research since I've been back to Edmund. And there has been, you know, a lot of drama, let's say, about the play before the play's even staged. And, of course, feminists just despise this play. They hate it. They think it's problematic. But if you go back even like into the, let's say, the 1990s, you know, people had a different view of this play, and especially the, let's say, the professors. I do have a course that I have taken for myself just as a refresher course on Shakespeare, and it is by Peter Saccio. And Peter Saccio did, he's now obviously retired. He retired from Dartmouth, but he was a longstanding professor of Shakespeare at Dartmouth College. And so he's not like, you know, a dummy when it comes to Shakespeare. And I have some quotes from him that I want to use in this program today. But The Taming of the Shrew is to be a comedy. And here's what he says. He says, Shakespeare adventurously combines farce with romance. The romantic thread in Kate's discovery of herself and of love for her husband. The bulk of the action, though, is farce. The play has many farcical elements and characters. And so it's meant to be a comedy. But essentially, what we saw or what we observed was a play full of Irish angst. And to be honest, I experienced a lot of Irish angst as a child. And, you know, there were some difficult times that I had to go through as, you know, in an Irish household. And so that's not really what I wanted to see. But what they did is they took the play and they wove it around so that Kate or Katerina becomes a symbol for the oppression of Irish women and the oppression of the Irish. And it really misses the point of what the play is all about. Now, here's what Saccio says about the play. And the one thing that mostly all modern companies do, there's a part of the play called an induction. And in this induction, there is a it's it's kind of like a play before the play, and what the induction does is there's this character, Christopher Sly, and he's kind of a bum and an alcoholic, and he gets kicked out of a tavern, and one of the lords in his city tries to play a joke on him, or decides to play a practical joke on him, and they pick him up out of the street. He's sound asleep, and they actually take him back to a estate area. They dress him in, you know, fine clothes. They put him to bed, and they make him believe that he's, you know, a lord, and that he's just been sick, and they've been taking care of him, and they tell him that he has a wife, and so because he's been sick, they tell him that, well, one thing you need is you need to watch a play, and you need to watch merriment. You need to laugh about things, and so then they show him Taming of the Shrew. And so it's all set up to be a play within a play. And that's really what Saccio brings out, is that now Shakespeare is dealing with marriage. And at that time, in the 1590s, there were a lot of arranged marriages. And that was the duty that fathers felt, that they need to arrange a good marriage for their daughter so that they actually lived a very wealthy life. But there also were not arranged marriages. There were romantic marriages. And so if you look at this play, the way it really should be looked at is he's dealing with some of the funny things that happen when you have an arranged marriage and you have a romantic marriage. And so actually Kate's marriage to Petruchio is an arranged marriage, and her younger sister actually goes through a marriage, but it's more of a romantic marriage. She runs away and marries the love of her life. And what people don't like is at the end of the play, Kate's marriage is actually better than Bianca's marriage. And, of course, Kate is considered the shrew, and Kate is considered, the heroine of the play, and Petruchio is, he does want to marry into wealth, and of course he's a wealthy estate. He owns a wealthy estate himself, and so he's like the landed gentry. He's a gentleman. But in this play that we saw, that none of this really comes out. And so I just wanted to read you another quote from Shakespeare, not from Shakespeare, but from Saccio. He says, when talking about Taming the Shrew, he said, it's difficult to say that Shakespeare is making any judgment about whether romantic union or arranged matches are preferable. Once the marriages have been contracted, however, the play does seem to take a stand. At least it ends with that long speech of Kate's in which a wife declares obedience to her husband. And it's a long speech, 44 lines. A wife should serve, love, obey. A wife owes duty to her husband, as a husband owes duty to a prince. And this duty is properly symbolized by the wife placing her hand beneath her husband's foot, a gesture that must occur on stage in that final scene. That is pretty uncompromising doctrine, and to many people in the late 20th century, it is quite an attractive doctrine. Many men are embarrassed to sit there and hear these words. Many women are angered by them. Now, in terms of this induction at the beginning of the play, the Globe totally wipes that out, but a lot of people have done that, so you can't just fault them for that. They're not leading the way in this. They've done it. But what they do is, instead of adding a comical induction or letting the audience know this is a play within the play, they use William Butler Yeats' poem on the Easter Rising, and they set it to Irish music, so it's this Irish folk song, and it really is a very sad song. And so I know when I first got in there, I'm thinking, wow, this really sounds like this is going to be sad, or this is going to be a difficult play to get through. And of course, this Kate sings this song at the beginning, so there's no induction, there's no character like Christopher Sly. There's nothing like that. So in other words, even though in the play there are comedic scenes, it still comes back to Kate is just like this browbeaten, beat down woman. And Petruccio is made to be this, out to be this chauvinistic beast who, you know, practically starves her to death and doesn't give her good clothing. And then at the end, there's no resolution in the end. And it's just like, well, the problem of women still exists and all that. So I have to admit, I left the play really feeling a little bit more discouraged than when I went in. But here's what Saccio says about why people do what the Globe has done to this play. He says, now, it is the practice of literary critics and theatrical artists, when they confront something they dislike, to reinterpret it. For the past 50 years or more, critics and directors have regularly attempted to revise the plain doctrine of Kate's final speech under the all-saving name of irony, claiming that Kate doesn't mean what she says. There are various ways to do this. Kate may do it crudely, simply by winking at the audience somewhere during the speech, or she can do it elegantly. But he goes on to say, I'm just going to end the quote, that part of the quote there. But he goes on to say, I don't think it works very well. With a winking or any other form of deceit, it seems to me to turn Kate into a sly sort of person. What we had liked about Kate was her openness as opposed to her sister's slyness. More largely, I think these methods are simply cheating. You can subvert any passage in Shakespeare by reading against the lines or contradicting it with a gesture. It's a familiar form of theatrical humor. It's great fun if you do it at a cast party. But when you're actually doing a production and you want to suppose that someone is lying or deceiving someone else, you've got to find basis for it in the text. In other words, what he's saying is, there's no basis for it in this text. And he does feel when people do this, they're cheating. And I think my wife and I actually felt very clearly that we were cheated. You know, it's like we wanted our money back. This wasn't a comedy. Even though, like I said, there were some very comedic scenes. But, you know, we had in our minds seeing something like Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor had done years ago in their movie Taming of the Shrew. It was, sure, they poked fun at each other. And there are some times when we can poke funny things at men and the way men handle things, and we can poke funny things at women the way women handle things. But really, there's something to Taming of the Shrew that is really quite fascinating, and Saccio brings this out in his class that I took from him, is that actually Petruccio acts like a shrew because he's trying to show Kate what she's like. And really, if you look at the way Shakespeare wrote the play, Kate is actually more violent than Petruccio. But in the play, I mean, Petruccio beats his servants. You know, he's just abusive to Kate. And so in some ways it reminded me a little bit of some of my Irish relatives that weren't very nice to people. So really, there's something we could learn from Taming of the Shrew, but the modern productions don't let us have it. They don't let us see it. And here's what Melanie Phillips also says in her article that I think is just really, really important. She goes on to say, this is towards the end of the article, says, Shakespeare's language has to be decoded to be understood. Children love cracking codes because it gives them power. That enormously boosts their self-esteem. According to the American Alliance for Theater and Education, performing Shakespeare's plays help improve students' understanding of other complex material, including science and maths. And she goes on to say, that's why teachers or theater directors who Balderize Shakespeare's plays or imbue them with relevant gimmicks corrupt the work of the greatest playwright in history and debase our general culture. And really, that's what my wife and I experienced with Taming of the Shrew. Now, here's one final quote I want to give you from Saccio, Peter Saccio. And again, remember, he taught English, Shakespearean English for 40 years at Dartmouth College. He says, "The Taming of the Shrew thus furnishes a good example of the ways in which old plays can be instructive to us. If you don't try to rewrite it, if you accept it as it is, you will find out a lot about the past. You think beyond the assumptions that you take for granted in the present. People did not always act as we would like them to do now. Why should they? We don't act the way they would like us to have done when they were thinking several centuries ago. Why should the living tyrannize over the dead any more than we want the dead to tyrannize over the living? The past is, in fact, a great reservoir for us all. It is useful to know that lives were organized in different ways, that we need not be trapped in the customs that happen to prevail at any given time. If we know that, we may be encouraged to forge new ways of coping with problems that seem to recur by combining elements of the present with elements of the past, with innovation." And so Shakespeare did have a lot to say about marriage, and he did, in a comical way, point out the problems with men. He also pointed out the problems with women. But here at the very end of the play, he resolves the issue. And you're not going to see that if you see Globe's Taming of the Shrew. Now, it's interesting. Saccio brings out that when Shakespeare wants you to think about or maybe make recommendations or change his way of thinking, he'll put something at the beginning of a play. He might do it through like a soliloquy, and just he's kind of like inviting you to question. But Kate's big scene comes at the very end of the play. She has 44 lines at the end. It's a soliloquy. And in other words, Shakespeare doesn't allow discussion. He wants you to get it. He wants you to listen to what he has to say. And this is what drives feminists nuts. This is why people want to change this play. This is why people don't even want to do this play. But any serious actor that does this at the end and does it right, it's very moving. I'll just cut into the middle of the 44 lines quickly. It says, "Thy husband is thy lord, thy life, thy keeper, thy head, thy sovereign, the one that cares for thee, and for thy maintenance commits his body to painful labor both by sea and land, to watch the night in storms, the day in cold. Whilst thou liest warm at home, secure and safe, and craves no other tribute at thy hands but love, fair looks, and true obedience." And so that's why people always want to write The Taming of the Shrew. It's for things like that. So we're not going to be using Taming of the Shrew on the radio, but I do want you to know that when we went to England, and we certainly were visiting at the Royal Shakespeare Company Theater and then visiting the Globe, we saw two radically different perspectives. Now, again, we really believe Shakespeare has something to offer us, and in the future we'll be doing some more. Of course, we're going to be doing Hamlet, and then we're going to be doing Richard III, and then later on we'll probably come back to some Shakespeare. So thanks for listening in today. If you have any questions or comments for me, you can certainly write to me at jbl@pcog.org. So again, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.